Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here for the Jug Life Podcast. Today's guest is Sean Waxman. Sean just got back from Thailand where he served as an announcer for the IWF World Championship. So he was in every A and B session. You definitely heard his voice in all the A sessions over the great lifting like Lasha, Kate and I, all the great lifting that happened there. So we talk with Sean about his experience at Worlds, some of his favorite memories from the training hall, moments on the platform, off the platform, as well as sort of updating the current Olympic qualifying status for Team USA on the men's and women's side, plus some discussion of athletes switching teams. There's been some high-profile athletes leaving teams, joining other teams, and with Sean as a USAW board member, we get some of his opinions and insights about that. So make sure you follow Sean on social media. If you're in the LA area, check out Waxman's Gym, just a little bit south of LAX. And then go hit that little thumbs up button down there, like the video, share the video, subscribe to the channel. You can find the Jug Life Podcast on Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and at jtsstrength.com. And also at jtsstrength.com, we have all of our apparel and online coaching services. So enjoy the episode.
Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
All right, so we got Sean Waxman straight from Pattaya.
Straight out of Compton.
Yeah, straight out of Pattaya. If you don't recognize the face, people at least recognize the voice.
That's
now.
Right.
The voice of the world championship, Sean Waxman. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Voice of the people of weightlifting.
Yeah, you guys did a fantastic job.
Thank you very much.
As I was waking up at 4 a.m. to watch, I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm just delirious or...
That's me.
They're really doing a good job. So
not the voice you want to hear it for.
No, Yeah, it's cool. J.P. Nicoletta really kind of spearheaded the whole thing initially back in Houston. And... he's kind of developed it over time. He spends a ton of time researching. Like, we know everything about everybody that's stepping on that stage, and that has a lot to do with his work. So I'm fortunate enough to, I look at it after he's done, and I just talk about what I see. So it's kind of an easy job for me. He's got the real hard job, but
I like the commentary a lot, because you guys do, the things you do are awesome in that you're talking about what's happening in the meet. And so it's like there's a commentary of the event.
Yeah.
But the thing you don't do that I really love is you never refer to how heavy the object is or how heavy the barbell is in relation to some household object.
Yeah. Like,
that's three air conditioners that they're snatching. Like, it's just, it's respectful of the sport, you know?
Lasha right. Just clean and jerk 2,700 loofahs.
Right.
Exactly.
Or 455 kilo men, or something like
right,
that.
Right, yeah.
No, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, and I prefer to coach, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But this is a good second.
Well, you got a face for the announcing.
So. So you're there every A session.
And B. Not every B, but 1 B and 2 A's every day.
So of all people, you probably saw the most of the world championships than... anything else. So, there's a couple different experiences. Obviously, you guys both have your world championship experiences, but from off the platform stuff, so training hall, just walking around at the venue, is there's a story that really stands out to you?
A couple, nothing like that kicks you in the face, but what I wanted to do a few things, one thing in particular, especially when I got there, I saw that the way this was set up, they had the training hall next to the venue, and there was the bleachers. So I was able to, you can observe from above, so to speak. So what I this time around, I spent a lot of time watching training hall, but from above, so you could see like the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I worked years in security. So like part of the thing we're trained is to like look at crowds and kind of, you can tell by the way crowd dynamics are, and you can kind of ascertain like what's going on. So I was really interested in,
like, is there about to be like a Russia versus Kazakh training?
Yeah, like a gang fight, you know, like a rumble happening, like when China and Georgia were kind of,
yeah,
you know, flexing. It was great. So I was able to see that from afar, and I was really like, the Georgia team really was fun to watch because they really, I think Georgi Atsunisi has done a really good job kind of creating this team dynamic. They really all seem to get along and support each other. And Lasher just seems to be like one of the guys, right? He's not like superstar strongest man in the world. He's just a guy.
Yeah. He's like two of the guys.
He's like, right, he's pretty much right.
He makes up two members of the gang.
I kind of figured he's like that guy that Brad Pitt kills in Troy.
Right. They,
like, they, there's a whole crowd of the Georgia team, and then he just like, released the Kraken. And China.
He is certainly the Kraken.
Man. Yeah.
But it was cool to see that interplay and just how different teams kind of respond to each other, respond to others. Also seeing the training is always interesting to me. I've always very interested in how people prepare that last week.
It seemed to me like I was watching a lot of the teams when we were in there, and it seemed like there's some pretty, like, I would guess you'd call it like traditional sort of, you know, week before the meet, a lot of people taking like heavy lifts. But then there were some standout things to me that were odd that I'm kind of curious your thoughts, like Toma from Romania, right? Mm-hmm. She snatched 116 in the training hall, then doesn't make even, what was it, 115?
I mean, 14? Whatever.
Like she snatches the world record, but then misses it in the competition.
Right.
And then you see things like the Chinese, and this is every meet, you see them doing, one day they snatch really heavy, and they do these extremely heavy pulls. Yeah. And not like, oh, it's like, it's heavy, but it's a pull. Like it's like
grinding.
A deadlift.
Yeah.
And they're all doing it. And they're doing it like just a few days before the competition. So I always think that's odd. Like, did you see anything else that stood out as like super unorthodox?
Not so much unorthodox. Like to me, like I'm with you. Like I don't get why you're lifting world records in the training hall a few days before you're supposed to lift. Like, what is that? Like,
yeah.
Why? I don't understand like the process that goes behind that.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I saw a lot of traditional approaches. You know, I think the one thing I have noticed over the years, to your point, is 90%, around 90% lifts, you know, pretty close, like openers.
Mm-hmm.
Openers a few days out, which is something that I've, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, just that, you know, that magical 2-3 weeks of before. Yeah. And always trying to find the better mousetrap. And, you know, I think that if your athletes are in shape, that lifting heavy, close, heavy-ish.
Yeah.
I mean, 90% if somebody's in shape is not going to affect the nervous system, I don't think, all that much.
Yeah.
But I saw a lot of that.
And, I mean, with China, Georgia, whatever, it's like you're seeing what they lift there, but we don't.
Yeah.
Really know what they'd lifted before.
Yeah. It could be 80%.
Yeah, it could very well be.
Because even to call like their really heavy pulls like an unorthodox thing, yeah, unorthodox relative to everyone else.
Sure,
but if
yeah.
they're doing it every year, it seemed by watching that they figured this weightlifting thing out quite well.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
They ever.
They were just unstoppable.
They were fun to watch. And,
yeah.
and North Korea was interesting to watch too. You know, they really crapped the bed last year.
Yes.
I have my suspicions as to why they didn't crap the bed this year, but I'll leave that for another podcast. the Chinese are really, you know, drugs or not. Like,
sure.
Forget about that discussion because no one's, there's no definitive proof.
Yeah. And plenty of people in the world have taken drugs before and they haven't lifted those weights.
So. Right.
Yes.
And it's really, they are so impressive.
Abu Jayab used to say that there's many, many people in many gyms taking drugs.
Right.
But there's only one world champion.
Right.
Right. And so, yeah, it's like you watch like Lou doing those numbers at 35, but it's not even just that. It's just like, what is he does? 191 he misses, right? And takes this insane jump
right
to win it and then keeps going after that. Like, at 35 years old. It's just unbelievable, right?
And he's got, and he might not even make the Olympic team because he's not their best guy.
It's a Roby scenario for him too.
Right. It's a Roby scenario. Right. Oddly enough. So it's just crazy. Like just crazy to see that team do their thing.
What do you think in the competition outside of training hall? What was the weirdest thing you saw on the platform?
Well, the Rustami nonsense. You know, he says, I'm ready for 195. Meanwhile, his last warm up is 160 with straps. And then he goes out.
Straps in the warm up room.
Straps with 160. Then he goes out and bombs with 180.
But whose fault was it?
Well, apparently it was everybody else's fault.
It seemed like the Iranians have worked out this like strategy of like failing, but then like blaming the refs and the judges somehow, like Salimi with the press outs.
Right.
Like, really like bad press outs. I mean, he was incredibly strong.
Yeah.
But they were just like, it's the kind of press out where the coach is like, lock out, right? And you know, he makes it and then it's like, what, three reds for what?
Yeah, that was just I don't know, man. I don't get the Iranians. They're just a strange bunch, man.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's incredible. Did they have an enthusiastic fan base there?
Like, no,
they weren't there at all.
No,
they're pretty dead in the.
That was a bad thing about it. It was practically no fans at all. I mean, the countries would show up to support their own lifters, but there was zero outside.
And tough when the host country is banned.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
IWF's really on a hot streak with that. Yeah. There was no golden barbells to redeem Thailand back into the meet.
No, there's no leverage that they can talk about getting, you know, not approving the visa to leave the country.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't understand. Well, I guess I don't understand why we even had it there in the first place. But I guess, you know, it's above my pay grade. But, you know, short of that, it was, you know, the performances were incredible. This was the first Worlds that I've been at for the year of the Olympics. So I've always really looked forward to that Worlds because it's by far that's going to be the best Worlds of the quad. And it was great to see because I didn't go to Houston. Because my athlete was held off that.
Yes. Mm.
It was great to see that. I was really pleased with. I just wish it was more competition. Although Gore did great in the supers.
Yeah.
But you know he totals 460 and loses by 24 kilos.
Yeah, that was kind of the only downside. I think some of those classes were super thin, especially in the women's, like the heavier women's class. You know, we were looking at like the Robies, a number of good lifters in the bottom four classes is like. Any one of those classes.
I have the stats.
There we go.
We'll talk.
It's just tougher to grow humans that big. You know, there's not a lot of them that are that big in that talent.
Yeah.
And women's lifting hasn't really
been around. So it was kind of like he's just going to run away with it.
We'll talk more about that kind of stuff when we get to more like the Olympic qualifying update. But if you had to pick, you know, maybe a standout one or two male competitors, standout one or two female performances. Or the ones that were the most fun for you as an announcer?
Lasha, it's because he's the strongest man in the world. Dude. That performance. And Gore was great, too. I mean, 212 snatch is, 212 snatch. It's crazy.
Yeah, he's just kind of born, you know, at the wrong time.
Right, born at the wrong time. And, like, he doesn't look like he should be able to do that. Like, he's doing it in a way that you would never teach somebody.
Yeah.
But he's fun to watch.
Back to the PVC for you, Gore.
That's right. Quo's 140. You know, take your choice of any of the Chinese. I mean, any of them were phenomenal.
Yeah, like in the watching that 49 session, as frustrating as it was for us for Alyssa to not lift well, then to just watch the rest of the session and be like, they got one girl who breaks the snatch record and a different one that breaks the clean and jerk record. And they probably have five more sitting at home ready to do it too.
Right, yeah.
So like any of those Chinese lifters were great. And to see, you know, like the battles with North Korea, the ones that were a battle, I mean, they weren't as close as, you know, as you'd like, but Tian Tao, Liu, phenomenal. Trying to think of some of the other Deng Wei, I mean, that whole thing was crazy. She's just nuts.
Yeah.
and so fun to watch. It's funny with her. I've watched her in the training hall a number of events and compete a number of events. If you videotaped any one of her lifts, training hall, competition, they all look the same. They don't look different. She doesn't ever lift the bar differently.
Yeah.
Other than when she misses, which is rare.
Yeah.
Tatiana was a surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, I was really, she did 40 and 70 in training, like it was in the training hall, like it was nothing. And she struggled.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't until that last clean and jerk that she actually looked like, you know, Tatiana. I wonder if, you know, she's feeling the age. And,
isn't she like 24?
28.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know, that might be the last time we see her for a number of reasons, from what I hear.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, I don't know, other than, like, the Lasha thing stands out because, I mean, big guys lifting big weights is always going to be, it's the last thing you see. So that's always going to be the big standout. But, you know, to your point, the 49s, like, there's, you can find something in almost every class. And then
the 109 session have, like, three world records.
Ramnow,
right?
Yeah, Ramnow was really, yeah, that whole idea, the 109s, the three guys in the 109s, there's four, really. But that whole session was great. You know, hearing the Star-Spangled Banner being played was always, you know, it was always really cool. So, you know, the Kate and I being Kate and I, guess, was fun. I mean, it's not a real strong set, a strong class, but look, I mean, you
win it.
You win.
Yeah,
you got to show up. Over
there. And our flag was, you know, was flying, so that's always cool.
How about Ilya? What are your thoughts?
I talked to him a bunch.
Yeah.
Too
much disco tech, probably.
Maybe not enough disco
tech. Not enough disco
tech. Maybe not enough. I don't know, he seems lost to me a little bit, you know. And I don't know, like, what he wants, like, if he knows what he wants to do, and I don't know if he knows what to do.
It is an interesting thing, because so much of his entire identity, his whole life, has been being a weightlifter, and for most of that time, being the best weightlifter in the world ever. And part of me is like, thinks it's pretty admirable that he's still doing it. That, I mean, if you were that fucking good, and now you're up there getting rocked around by clean and jerks that you used to snatch, but you're still getting up there and doing it.
Yeah.
Like, on one hand, it's like, he must really love weightlifting because he's...
Right,
yeah.
And on the other, it's like, man, what are you doing? But I don't know. I mean, it
definitely mixed feelings for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I always, like, think that, you know, he's going to, like, step out.
Yeah.
And the you know, super Ilya is going to show up because, I mean, he really did some amazing things. Like when, just to watch him, like that 240 squat jerk that he did years ago.
245.
245, right.
The training hall, or the little training video.
So, I mean, like, you know, stuff like that, it's just like, you know, I have, a bro showed me a video of it was like a 320 front squat. Yeah. 320 front squat. Like all these, that's not the guy that we have now. And, you know, it's like he's doing it. He must love it. Because I don't know why else he would do it, because he's, you know, he's...
Well, Max and I have said, like, that the hope... The only cool thing that could happen now is if Ilya was just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'll see you guys in 2020. I'm going to be a full 109.
Yeah.
I'm going to just be juiced to the gills.
Just do it one more time.
Yeah. Huge.
Clean and jerk 260, drop it, see the white lights, die on the platform. Like, what a way to go.
I mean, I don't know. But he seems happy. At least he's putting on a good face. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing,
It's definitely interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But we'll see. You see, he wants to go to Tokyo. I just don't know.
I mean, can he even qualify is the question.
And I don't know if he's the best. I mean, he might. I don't know if he's their best guy.
And how many spots does...
One.
One of each.
Yeah, I think he...
I mean, Ulanov, Dennis Ulanov is probably the guy that's going to go if they have one. I mean, I don't know.
Because, well, even if they have one, Ilya is not going to be in the top eight or a continental champion. Like, he's not even going to be eligible.
Right, he's not even going to be eligible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... Getting on to that topic, Olympic qualifying eligibility, we have a whole nother podcast that people can listen to about what that process entails.
It must be like a 5-hour podcast.
There's the most confusing flow chart ever. So we won't go through all of that right now, but assuming people understand it, we're just going to talk about, and maybe more specific to the U.S.,
yes,
who's still in the mix. And the way that I've tried to explain it before, it's like you're playing a video game, like a racing video game, and you have to get through these checkpoints
right
in time.
Right, right.
And if you didn't make the checkpoint, you're out of the race.
Right. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. At this point, there's been, we're through two of the three qualifying periods. We're two checkpoints in, and if you didn't make it in time to this checkpoint, you're probably out of the race. So that, I think, for the women's side of things for the U.S., leaves Kate Nye, Maddie Sasser, Maddie Rogers, Jordan De La Cruz, Alyssa Ritchie, Morgan King, Sarah Robles, and Jenny Arthur, probably as your realistic...
That seems about right.
Yeah, that our potential four spots will come out of that group of girls. So Kate Nye seems about as sure thing as could be, barring injury or anything like that. The other spots, though, a lot...
Sarah probably, because of her placement in Pan Am, is probably, barring something stupid, she's probably a lock.
Yeah, so on the current rankings, removing the extra Chinese lifters ahead of her, she would be third in her category.
Oh, really? For the world.
Yeah, but some of these people might. I guess no one would have four qualifying scores on this list, would they? Yeah. So this is basically with everyone having three scores. It's Tatiana, Wenwen Lee, other Chinese, North Korea, Robles.
Oh shoot! Okay.
So you take those extra Chinese out. Tatiana, Wenwen, Robles. I can't see, three other... There's not going to be three other Americans who get ranked higher than third.
No.
So, yeah. And you would know this, and I mean, Max probably know as well, but let's say, the qualifying period ends, all that stuff, and we have two lifters. Let's say Alyssa ends up ranked seventh at 49, and Maddie Sasser ends up ranked seventh at 64. What is the tiebreaker?
It's their second highest Roby score.
Second highest.
The highest Roby score.
The highest Roby score that hasn't been counted in their...
It hasn't been counted.
That's my understanding. Don't quote me on it.
Interesting.
So it would really be...
So
it's like your number five Roby score.
Number five Roby score. That's my understanding.
Okay.
So I will, I have a call tomorrow with Phil, so I'll...
I guess it's not necessarily your number five, though, because since it has to be one, you can't have any more than two from one period. It could realistically be your third highest score, but it would have been your third highest in a specific period as well.
Right.
So that's my understanding. So I will get you confirmation of that, for sure.
So to air my grievances about this Olympic qualifying process, as confusing as it is, the way that the weight classes are organized, and that me complaining about this isn't going to do anything, is fucking stupid. They are horribly done. They are done in a way that defies, mathematical logic. Because for the classes to go from 45 to 49, a 4-kilo spread, and then 49 to 55, a 6-kilo spread, then back to 4 kilos, then 5 kilos, then 6 kilos, then 5 kilos, then 5 kilos, then 6 kilos.
Well, you know the story behind all this.
A fucking dartboard? Or?
Well, so they originally came up with, kinda. They got a bunch of scientists together and said, figure out what the best distribution would be.
There
was an original one.
I saw the original one and it made perfect sense. Yeah. They went back into the room and they came out with this.
They did a bad job.
So, and this has nothing to do with science at all. Do about pot. This is a political distribution, not a science distribution.
Because so 49 to 55 kilos, that jump 6 kilos for that to be equivalent or less.
Right.
Yeah.
Those 6 kilos at those body weights are so significant compared to 71 to 76, 76 to 81. And there's this just greater concentration of good lifters in the lower classes.
Right.
In the women's side particularly, and because that's where our Team Juggernaut potential Olympian is, that's what I really pay attention to. So if we call 600 Roby, like that's you're really legit lifter there. And that's about the threshold of like where people are going to make an international team. So I went through the results and of the world's results and saw of unweighted Robies, where how many in each class were 600 or above?
Unweighted meaning no bonus.
No bonus.
Got it.
Yeah. So in the 45s, 600 plus. And that's whatever. That's too small of a class anyways. It's for children, so who cares about that? That's just the future 49s class once they move out of youth. 49s, 18. 55s, 17. 59s, 16. 64, 16. 71s, 4. 76, 6, 81, 5.
That's interesting.
87, 3. So combined in the 71, 76, 81, and 87 class, there are as many good lifters by this definition of a 600 Roby combined in those four classes as there are in just the 49 kilo class.
It's interesting.
And like, okay, we got to have 10 classes for each gender. Sure, but like, it should be like 45, 47, 49, 51.
Right.
Like it's
weighted towards the bottom.
Yeah, because not just because there's more good lifters down there, but 2 kilos is so significant a change in their potential performance.
2 kilos at 49 is a lot different than 2 kilos at 89.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different, you can lose 2 kilos at 89 for taking a big shit.
Yeah. And the 81 kilo champion had a 636 Roby. Alyssa, who, I'm not breaking any news here, did not lift well, had a 646 Roby. So 13th place in the 49s is a relatively better lifter than first in the 81s.
Yeah, I'm with you, man.
Well, the weight classes just make no sense because you end up with this totally backwards deal. I mean, it's just, that's, most countries that do weightlifting that are good at it, Asian, China, like they have more good lifters down there. So why is the sport not favoring that? It doesn't mean that we can't have these high classes, these big classes, but it's just like it washed out the competition.
The interesting thing about that is, so the makeup of the IWF board, when they did this, there was no Chinese representative. So there wasn't a guy in China saying, we got
to screw them maybe.
So I don't know what happened in that room. All I know is that they had good weight classes, and they went in and they came out with this nonsense.
That was the one where they had like a 116 men's class. It was really nice looking. It was like I think it was like 50 kilos.
55 was the lowest weight class. Or
50 women, 55 for women. It was like a really nice, really normal. Like everyone was like, this is great, and it got leaked. And then they changed it. And the story I heard and we heard was that the Qataris paid all of the African coaches to go in and vote on something different
so
they could get their
something like that.
Their guy to go in and lose to Tian Tao later.
Because, if 71s and 76s were combined into one class, like a 73-kilo class, and the 81s and 87s became the 84-kilo class, then you've got two good, competitive class is still not on par with the lower ones, but
they're never going to be on par with the lower ones.
Yeah, but then you could take those two lower classes and redistribute a little bit in that 52-ish kilo range.
Yeah, but you got to understand, so fairly reasonable minds sitting at this table, one would argue. I don't know if it's the same thing with the people making these decisions. And a lot of times the decisions that are being made aren't what's best for the sport. Mm-hmm. And that's always going to be the issue. The more I get involved in, being on the board and knowing some of the inner workings of what goes on, I realized, boy, I tell you what, this is not how I would run this business. You know, this is not how you run your business or you run your business. It's just not how you do it. But they're motivated and they're driven by different goals than we are.
Right.
And you can't, like, you look at these decisions and you get crazy, but you got to look through it through their lens, which I don't know what that fucking lens is, but it's not certainly a lens that we possess.
Yeah.
And I don't have any expectation that the decisions are going to be reasonable, because they're not reasonable people making these decisions in the first place. So, and I think that thankfully, you know, we have some representation, you know, we have some, because if not, who knows what's going to happen. And I know actively they don't want us to be involved, because I think, you know, us being involved has been in their eyes part of the problem. Right, because drug testing and this and that, and you know they don't want any of that.
Rules and following,
right? All these pesky rules, which is interesting, because you know if we don't have these rules, then there's no sport. Like, we're out.
Yeah.
So, and you know, funny story, quick story. So, guy that I know has worked with the Russian Olympic. He's in the business end for the Sochi Olympics. So he was part of that, getting them like. Advertising deals and the whole thing. So I was talking to him a few weeks ago, and he says, like, he went over, he talked to like the head of their, I don't know, marketing or whatever it is, but he's like a high ranking guy in the Russian sport. And he was talking about, you know, how much money, he said, basically saying it's going to take X amount of money to do what you want to do, this and that. And the guys are like, well, we need to start making money to, you know, to get this going. And he says, okay, well, how much do you need? He told him, he says, okay, great. Well, here's the plan. He says, no, you don't understand. I need it next week. Like, this is instead of like, you know, they don't think in terms of, you know, what it's going to be in the long term. It's like, he needed money next week. So for whatever reason, like, they don't have a concept of how to run a business and how to do things. So it's just like we're pissing in the wind with the international politics. Like, I really don't know how weightlifting continues to thrive, if it consider it thriving, based on the outlandish decisions that are made. And I don't know, man. I have my worry that I don't know if it's sustainable. Like, I really worry about that.
Well, they're giving us at least 4 more years to figure it out or fuck it up or whatever.
I mean, you got guys and they want to change like the format of what weightlifting is in the Olympics. They want to do all kind of, I mean, it's crazy.
Like straps, using straps, unlimited.
Mixed, like maybe like a mixed pair, or eliminating one of the lifts and doing like to me, it's like weightlifting is compelling, right? It's, you know, maybe not sitting there and watching it, it's not for everybody. But, you know, the fact of, you know, who can lift the most weight is something that's like in our DNA. It's been forever. So instead of thinking about, let's change this thing that we have, that we've been doing since man walked upright, why don't we figure out a way to make it something that's appealing? Because it is. Yeah. All you got to do is present it in the correct way.
Yeah.
So let's focus our energy on that instead of trying to change it.
Yeah, presenting it in the right way is not, you know, all right, we're gonna have a woman do the snatch and a man do the clean and jerk, and it's combined. Like,
you don't have to.
I think it's part of the stuff that you guys did really well with this, of knowing who you're talking about, having those you know, kind of human interest preview type of pieces. That's what people want to hear. They want to know
that stuff. That's what's compelling. It's not the thing that they're doing. It's, you know, it's the whole surrounding part of it.
Because there is nothing more compelling about, you know, a person doing whatever swim stroke back and forth, than there is about the person lifting as much weight as they can over their head.
Yeah,
like,
true.
It's the same. Neither of them in a vacuum are particularly interesting.
No.
But if you
not can, unless you're really into it, yeah, right? Yeah. But that's not who they're marketing should yeah. be marketing to.
But if you know, anyone who watches Simone Biles like, holy shit, that was cool.
Right.
You know, that's its whole own thing. But these for a sport like swimming to be so exceptionally popular and weightlifting to not is like
Swimming, I had this conversation at the last board meeting and I talked about, we do a great, so our mission statement has like two parts to it. It has this kind of improving our competitive excellence in the world stage. And there's an and to promote like the sport of weightlifting. And I looked at that, I was like, I don't know if we're really doing that in an effective way. And to me, it's about, weightlifting should be the beacon to promoting barbell lifting. I don't care if it's Snatch or Clean and Jerk, but who else is better equipped to talk about lifting barbells? I mean, we've relied on other third parties for our whole existence. CrossFit, thank God for CrossFit because they got people lifting barbells, but we've relied on them. Now that whole thing is starting to change a little bit. So what are we going to do? Are we going to, pick up the mantle and say, hey, we should be the one, let's get everybody lifting a barbell. And if they do Snatch or Clean and Jerk, that's great. I mean, that's fine. But you broaden the funnel, the opening of the funnel, get more people in the funnel and keep your conversion rate the same. You're going to get better stuff coming out the bottom. But the entry to lifting barbells shouldn't be Snatch or Clean and Jerk. Mm. It should be lifting barbells. Let's teach them how to squat. Let's teach them how to press. Let's teach them how to deadlift. The basic shit. And then we'll see. And then let's be the ones to do that. So I'm trying to move everything in that direction because that's how we're going to survive. That's how your gym is going to get better. Because you get people in, hey, I want to learn how to squat. Hey, I want to learn how to do this. Then you can maybe convert them into a snatch. But if not, who cares? We got to keep the gym open. It's a lot easier to keep a gym open if you got people lifting barbells generally, some Snatch or Clean and Jerk, some, not. But if not, we're going to have a hard time keeping our doors open.
Yeah.
We can't always have an empire like the juggernaut.
So to jump back into the Olympic qualifying stuff, the men's side we can sum up pretty succinctly.
It's Wes.
Yeah, CJ. Wes Harrison is...
Yeah.
He's I think he'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's on the bubble there.
Yeah, and no Americans outside of those three.
I mean, you have, it gets really interesting.
Kane.
Because you have Kane, who really, his fate is really going to be determined by Fernando. Because if Fernando is top eight in the world,
mm-hmm.
then...
Yeah.
Then Kane becomes number one in Pan Am. But if Fernando is out of the top eight, then Kane's screwed.
Yes.
Where did Fernando place?
So he wasn't pushing for this one because his knees have been a little sore. So he just wanted to go and compete. So he wasn't pushing. I don't know where he's ranked overall, absent any repeats.
So on the current list, Kane is actually ranked ahead of him because...
being in competitions, Roby points.
Yeah, by total Robies that they have available now, Kane is quite a bit ahead of him. But that's because one of Fernando's three scores that's being counted is a zero.
Oh, okay.
From, Pan Ams.
Okay. Kane's got a shot. Cantrell's an interesting character. He's kind of on the outside, with his toe in the water. I don't know about Alex. I don't know. I mean, he's...
Those guys are too far back.
I think they might be too far back.
Yeah, I don't think they can get top eight.
But I don't think Alex could be number one Pan Am. So...
Yeah, Cantrell's 16th on the list right now, but a lot of Pan Am country men ahead of him.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
you might be able to take that fourth spot if you're... if you get a couple of Roby scores in you, but I don't know who I don't know who's gonna take that fourth spot. I don't know.
Yeah, and there just might not
be.
But three American men in the Olympics. That's an improvement from
Right, so if we don't have somebody that meets the criteria, we don't get that spot.
No. Correct. It's just up to four. It's not necessarily good.
I didn't
all four.
Think of that.
Yeah.
Right. Shit.
Yeah, it's just up to four qualifying people. So, but on the women's side, to get back to that very hotly contested debate or hotly contested contest there, Kate and I probably almost definitely in. A lot of the other spots, though, are Robles probably in the lead of that group, but you got a good like six-way fight for those other three spots.
Yeah.
And a lot of this, as we enter the third qualifying period now, is going to be determined by who can make the biggest Robies and improve their rankings the most in the last period. And there's only one gold meet.
Pan Ams.
Pan Am Championships. And qualifying for that is very significant. So, as we look at the Pan Am qualifying list, I'd say there's pretty much five women locked in. Kate Nye, Maddie Sasser, Maddie Rogers, Jordan De La Cruz, Morgan King. They're at 708 and above Robie scores. Then you have the next group of five, which is actually a group of 9 athletes because of the repeats of like multiple of a third 71,
right,
a third and fourth 59.
And those are interesting battles too, because then it's just a matter of you got to beat that
head. So there's really probably 12 to 15 women legitimately competing for the next five spots on that senior Pan Am team. And on the outside, looking in right now, at number 11 is Jenny Arthur with a 619 Robie from her 245 total at 81.
But she's going to be ranked pretty high internationally?
Yeah.
At whatever class, was it
87. But, I mean, if she doesn't make it onto the American Pan Am team.
Right, then she can't, right.
I know that the two are not related. Like, it's not like she has to make the Pan Am team to make the Olympic team, but what a fucking weird thing would it be to make the Olympic team and you can't make the Pan Am team?
Right.
Because, for her to make the Pan Am team, if my memory is correct when we figured out all these numbers, as an 81 to surpass, Sakacia is currently 10th on the qualifying list with a 632 Robie. For Jenny to surpass that, it was like a 251.
Yeah.
It'd be a pretty significant total for her. And she was a full 81 at Worlds. She weighed 80.8. So you can't kind of rely on that gaining body weight. So it's an interesting thing. If she can't make Pan Ams, can she make high enough Robies? Does it matter about high Robies? Because, the 87 kilo class Robies are just really low.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about it, there's going to be plenty of opportunities, I think, to get Robie points. So.
Yeah, sure. There will be, for sure. And you would almost not even have to lift at 87. You just have to show up and attend the meet to satisfy the requirements. She already has a gold meet and silver meet, which she does.
Right.
Or two golds. Then she has to do nothing except show up to meets and weigh in and gets to go to the Olympics and will earn the spot in the Olympics. And reality is, anyone in that situation that gains the body weight to be 81.01... can do that.
Yeah,
so
that is
any of those lifters that are below her.
The simplest path to the Olympics is just to weigh 81.01
through
kilos.
Golden Corral.
That's what Rogers is planning on doing.
Right, so she goes 87, bumps Jenny off.
Right.
Right. And the reality is, Nye might possibly have a better shot at winning a medal at 87, right? If Jenny is ranked third.
Oh, she for sure does. 87. Right.
Then why not Nye go 87? Because she'd have a better shot at winning a medal. Versus 76, where she has pretty low chances of winning a medal, right? She's
yes.
like fifth or sixth, and that's a very competitive class.
Yes, there's two lifters who are far ahead of everyone else. So,
yeah.
Do you think Alyssa could make it to 81.1? She's a very impressive eater when she gets going.
She'd have to eat shorty.
Yeah.
it would just be like doing the water load for a water cut,
Verse.
But you just hold your pee in no matter what.
Oh my god.
I think there would be some physiological breakdown.
Show up soaking wet, pouring water onto her before she gets on the scale.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
just eating sponges and then...
Do you have $29 in quarters in your pocket?
Well, there's some rule where you can wear jewelry. Did you see that?
What?
Like religious jewelry?
That's what I heard.
Are you serious?
Yeah. You should look into it.
I mean, I live in Oakland. We could get a gold chain.
Yeah. Alyssa shows up with the Flavor Flav clock, and I joined this new cult. Flavor Flav's our leader, and we're required.
Is that
to
really
this.
True?
That's what I heard.
I'm going to do it.
Get into it.
Why not?
I mean, it's equally as ridiculous as anything else.
It is. It would be actually the most satisfying victory ever to get the Olympics just because you wore gold chains.
That's right.
Mr. T.
So I don't hold me to it, but you should look into it.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So a lot of this Pan Am qualifying is going to come down to the American Open Finals.
Oh, it's going to be finally a domestic meet that actually means something.
Yes. I mean, the way Olympic qualifying and international team qualifying has, you know, changed in the last really since 2017 on.
Yeah.
2017 Nationals was still pretty good, but
yep.
But
the Olympic trials was great too, I thought.
Yeah,
In Utah.
Yeah.
As it should be.
Right.
But from 2017 AO, 2018 Nationals, 2018 AO, the proliferation, 2019 Nationals, the proliferation of the AO series, it's really made American Open Finals and Nationals so like insignificant. It's just another meet.
Yeah.
And thankfully, that will not be the case at this American Open Finals because everyone is going to show up there to try and get one of these last five Pan Am spots.
I wish they had a session with everybody lifting together, but they can't do it. So that would be great.
It would be, but they'd need like three of those sessions.
Right. Think,
because, I mean, just in the 59 kilo class, like you've got Taylor Turner with a 207.
Right.
Taylor with 207, Sarah Beth 206, Hunter 205, Lucero 203. Our girl Christy Brewer just did 200.
Right.
You know, which, like, awesome for Christy, 38 years old. And what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, if there was a 59 or a 58, I guess then, that would have done 200.
Right.
It would have
been
like, holy shit, this is the queen of USA weightlifting.
Yeah.
The standard has raised so significantly. Nice. But yeah, just in that class, and then there's Kaya Bromwell on here at 195, Christine Na at 194. That's
right.
Yeah. So the rankings on the left, they're all in the top 12 of the rankings list. Now they're not actually counted.
Jesus.
You know, the third, fourth, fifth, sixth aren't actually counted. But
so how does it work if you have a lifter 71 kilos on the list, specifically Maddie Rogers? Kate and I, both 71s, they're competing at Pan Am's at 76.
Yeah.
Right? Their total has to count for them as 76s.
Yes.
Right? They have to announce that before the team is announced. Obviously.
Right. I mean,
so then they would say, okay, they'd both still be fine at 76.
Right.
They're both in at 76. But then that opens up the 71s, correct? Then there's two spots left at 71, assuming somebody has those 71 totals, right?
Well,
like
so 71
right now we have
in the top 10.
Duplicates at 71 or duplicates in any class. If
right.
those people move out of that class, then the duplicates can move on. So this whole list as it looks now will just be completely scattered and totally different when we actually see the Pan Am list.
Yes.
Right? The Pan Am
right,
team.
Because the 71s are going to be vacant now.
Right.
Yeah, so like just looking at the list right now, Nye and Rogers turn into 76s. The team now, yeah, that moves Sakacia off because
she's
10th right now, but the last person on the team, but she's a 76,
right.
And now she's the number 376. Alwine goes from a red asterisk to on the team at 71.
Right.
And then I think that would actually move Jenny up into 10th because...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But... in a precarious 10th. I mean, she's there with 619.
She's got to come and she's got to put up a good total.
And if there's 59s, you know, any of these five 59s.
You don't know who else is going to move. Like, people are going to, I mean.
So then the question becomes, what happens from a strategic standpoint for someone in the 71s who, I mean, really the one kind of comes out of Rogers. If Rogers is 71 with 240, Jenny Orshakesha at 76 does a total that's 241. Rogers has to either stay 71, but she stays 71 with 240. She's on the team. There's 276s, Nye and whatever other 76. They go to Pan Ams. She can't lift at 76. Right? She'd have to lift at 71.
She'd have to lift 71.
Which potentially would eliminate that meet as... You need
right.
to do two other meets to get that qualifying. So you could be, any of these people could be in a place where, you know, some of them, Route Rogers and others, could be in places where they, if they don't move around or make other totals, they could be, you know, out of luck in that,
yep.
in that situation, right?
They can't, yes, they
can't change there.
Max had mentioned, so I'd brought up, you know, it's probably more likely for Jenny that she could go down to 76, total 238 or better, and qualify. As the list stands right now, be on the team as a 76. But he said that you can't, like, she could qualify, you know, and they've done this before, that she's qualified as a 76 and lifted as an 81.
Right.
But she would not be allowed to qualify as a 76 and lift as an 87.
No.
It's got to be one class.
One class.
I believe it's only one class.
Yeah. That's what Phil told me.
Yeah.
You can only move up or down one. So it's really interesting. You have this scenario where it takes a lot of analysis to look at the list and make sure you're actually, you know, any one of these people is in the right position.
Then you got to look at what everybody else, all the possible scenarios based on everybody else.
Right? Because if that was the case, we could go, Alyssa could qualify as a 49, purchase some jewelry, and lift as 87.
That's right.
Yeah, 20th place, but, you know.
Olympian.
Right. Yeah.
So hopefully all the kids listening at home had their had their abacuses out and they've sorted out.
It's crazy. So I haven't sat down like you guys because I don't have a horse in the race so much. But you know, I'll start to look at it now because I'm just interested in just how this whole thing is gonna pan out. And by Americans, I want to have a good idea of who needs what.
Yeah,
because it's gonna be.
It's gonna be a fantastic meet.
It'll be a great meet for sure, no matter what. Yeah. So,
I mean, men's and women's side. The women's side, though, like the 49 session, the 59 session, the 71s, the 76s. There's gonna be a lot of very heated battles in there. So the last thing I wanted to talk to you about. So shortly after the 71 session. I was on Facebook and I scrolled across a post from the Sean Waxman that said, "Congratulations to Danny Camargo."
Oh, that one.
Yeah. So the bigger part of this is, and we all, you know, we've dealt with this from both sides. You've had it happen.
Yeah.
Lifters, prominent lifters, changing teams. So, you know, Matty Rogers just switched to Catalyst. We had three world team members from MASH all leaving MASH with TBD, you know, destinations. Yeah, we've had that happen with prominent lifters, American record holders. You've had it happen with international team members. What do you think? I mean, is this a real problem for USAW? And
you know, the lifter has the right to do what they want to do. I mean, you can't force somebody to do force them to do something. To me, it's a question of character. It's kind of, like I said, you know, to me, it's just a question of character. You know, if you have a problem with your coach, or if you have a problem with your athlete, how is the best, before you figure out, you know, is there a possible solution? How is the best solution? I'm going to upend my life and I'm going to do something else. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to this point together, right? For better or for worse. But what happened to a discourse between two people instead of like, you know, screw you, I'm going to do something different. How is different better? How is it better? How is it better than you have a relationship? The hardest thing to do in this world is to form a close, functional relationship, even a little dysfunctional. I mean, it's never all functional, right? It's just, it's a combination. So, like, I don't understand the decision-making process in I'm better off with somebody else, even though I got to this point together. You know, how do? So I just don't understand it. And, you know, especially if it's like if I do something that's annoying to you, then tell me, right? If you don't like something I'm doing, how about say, hey, shithead, cut it out. Instead of, you know what, I'm going to get coached remotely by somebody across the country. And I'm going to train in another gym without any eyes on me is better than training every day with the same person I've been training with for all these years. In what world is that better?
Well, in regards to remote coaching, I mean, obviously we're big on that.
Yeah.
But you guys, I mean, you guys are the unique unicorn in this world, because it doesn't generally, it's not supposed to work as well as it has worked. I think, you know, the Alyssa's a different animal.
Yeah, and of course the argument could always be made too, like, well, yeah, would she even be lifting better, you know, if it was
but she started this way.
Yeah,
like there was no, it wasn't, you know, there's no other way. Like, she wasn't working with somebody for all these years and then say, oh, I'm gonna every day, and then, oh, I'm just gonna go remote. That's not the case.
Do you think there's a I don't want to say a problem in USAW. Do you think there's more just like a different kind of mentality in the U.S. that's something of like a grass is always greener kind of thing, where you know, people assume that something better exists, and it doesn't mean that it's not better, right?
Sure.
But it's more of a don't bother refining what I have or working on what I have, as opposed to just jump ship and do something different.
You know, I think, first of all, I think that, and it's one of the things, this is one of the reasons why I ran for the board. I think that the coach's value isn't very well defined in USAW. You know, I don't think, look, there's a lot of bad coaches, but there's a lot of good coaches. I mean, it's not a lot of good coaches, but there's a good number of good coaches and a lot of bad coaches. The good coaches, you know, we know who they are, but I don't think there's not a culture in USAW to give the coaches their due. That's a bad way to put it. But, you know, we're not respected among the organization as much as I would like.
Well, you know, Max and I have talked about this a lot. So much of probably the athlete side or the public's side of good coaches is perception.
Right.
And a lot of that perception is created through marketing. And a lot of that marketing seems to just be telling people that you're the best coach. Yeah.
Right.
Where weightlifting and powerlifting similarly, but even more so weightlifting because of the idea of a coach of record. That like at powerlifting meets, yeah, I guess we are listed as our athletes' coaches in the IPF and stuff, but it's not a big deal like it is in weightlifting. For there not to be something that exists that USAW tracks, that they can say this, you know, these are this athlete's lifetime of performances.
Right.
This is how many, because this is how the information gets submitted in meet results anyways. It's just a big spreadsheet that you can't click on their name in the web point thing and see, all right, here they are 3 for 6, 4 for 6, 2 for 6, you know, 5 for 6, bomb out, whatever. Their results and who the coach of record is. And then I could click on that coach of record's name. Well, there's all their athletes. There's all of their, you know, there's all of their lifters' makes and misses,
right,
and records. And okay, well, I can click on this athlete and they, you know, were with this coach and then they switched. And did they get better or did they get worse?
It's a great idea.
It's the most objective sport. Powerlifting and weightlifting are the most objective sports possible. But there's not objectivity being used to determine who is good and who is not good.
Right.
And it would be so easy to have, and so valuable for USAW in choosing, you know, athletes, choosing team leaders, choosing national coaches, choosing where to place, you know, support and emphasis and stuff. It's a strange thing that they don't do that. And it would be a useful tool for an athlete to be able to have maybe a more objective look of how well am I actually lifting here, and how well is this coach, you know, this other coach that I'm thinking about going to, how well are their
athletes lifting? You know, I think you give that, I agree with you 100%, but, you know, I think that emotion and bad decision making and poor like character as far as like, you know, predatory coaches, I think that trumps common sense a lot of times.
You think there's a lot of predatory coaching?
Coaching poaching?
Is that what you call
coaching,
it?
Coaching poaching. That's good.
Coaching and poaching. It's
yeah,
a lifestyle.
I think
there you go.
You know, I think that it takes a lot. Like, you know, like with me, you know, I have my athletes that I have now, and the thought of, you know, spending another 10 years trying to find some, you know, 16-year-old. I don't know. I mean, I'm 50 years old. Like, I don't know if I want to do that anymore. It takes a tremendous commitment to start somebody from scratch and bring them along. And a lot of people don't have the patience and to undertake that that process. And they say, you know, I'm going to hop in towards the end, right? And I'm going to get this person. And look, you know, the whole with the Maddie situation, at the end of the day, no one's going to give a shit. You know, Maddie's 100,000 followers she has, they don't care. The Catalysts, you know, they're following, they don't give a shit. It's not going to affect anybody's business. But so is it wrong? Like, if you don't hear the tree, you know, you don't hear the tree falling, but that whole statement, you know, did it really fall? You know, at the end of the day, it depends on what metric you use to determine whether it's right or wrong. If you use, like, is it going to affect anybody? It's not going to affect anybody. But at the end of the day, it's a, you know, to me, character's a big thing, right? It's a big thing. And to act in a way that seems, you know, I don't know the whole story, but it seems to me that, you know, whenever those, not just singling that one out, but in any situation like that, you know, there's always two sides to the story. I get it. But it seems like somebody's acting in poor, with poor character when these situations happen. If you have a relationship with an athlete for a long period of time and all of a sudden that athlete leaves without any discussion, you know, to me, that somebody's doing something underhanded.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, we don't know the details of that specific situation. I've only had very positive interactions ever with Matty Rogers.
Me too.
But I could also see from her perspective, looking at her results and being like, man, you know, I've been lifting the same weights for several years.
Absolutely. Then that's a conversation you have with the coach.
Yeah.
What I do think, you know, and this isn't unique to that situation, the MASH situation, you know, any of these things that have happened before, any specific one, but as a collective idea, that USAW has to be looking into, investigating, you know, doing some due diligence, like, you know, the NBA is talking about trying to do with tampering and
right,
that kind of stuff to some degree. Because if it's, you know, these coaches are trying to get in athletes' ears while they're on another team and not being above, you know, bored about it and talking to the other coach. Like when we had, you know, an athlete leaving or inquiring about contacting us about leaving the club, the first thing that we did was call the coach that she was with and say, hey, this person contacted us.
Right.
We want you to know. And if that's happening, of course, but that's not the case in most of these. So if there's coaches, you know, having these closed door conversations, and even worse, you know, when we hear of these things of, you know, promises of stipends that aren't being fulfilled, like that's something that USAW needs to be sanctioned.
We give out a $45,000 a month stipend, by the way, if anyone's interested.
Yeah. So to be fair, we're moving in that direction. So there's going to be changes that reflect this. At the end of the day, there's not a lot we can do because, you know.
But if an athlete has a text message or an email from a coach that says, join my team and I'm going to pay you this amount per month, and then you go in the bank account and that ain't there, like,
right,
that coach who's making that promise needs to be sanctioned severely, I think, like, because they're lying to kids, you know, 20-year-old, 21-year-old, whatever, who whatever it is, $500 a month or something might be a big deal to them, and then they don't get it, or it's $250 when they were told it was going to be $500 or whatever the numbers are, you know, and they've uprooted their life to move some other place, and they're just kind of fucking stuck there.
You know, I think in those situations, it's a little bit more black and white, but I think most of the situations we come across are in the gray. And I think, like, to your point, if that situation occurs, it's very easy. There's a paper trail. There's a, you know, it's a real easy, but, you know, in some situations where, you know, an athlete is groomed away from their coach, what are you going to do?
Do you think maybe the easiest solution would be to eliminate coach of record and eliminate any kind of require, like coaching is literally just one certification. You get no recognition for doing it, right? And so only the athlete is rewarded for their accomplishments. Only the athlete is ever recognized.
I don't know.
I mean, they could use it as marketing to build their business.
But
I'm saying that might prevent the situation where coaches are stealing or whatever. They're poaching. They're trying to gather other people under them to build their reputation in the community, right? It would prevent that because no one would ever really recognize that outside of your own advertising, which you could do on your own. I mean, you could call yourself the best weightlifting coach in the world and hire fitness models to do videos of lifting. And you know, it's no different than that. So right. You can't stop that. But if you couldn't receive recognition or you didn't receive anything as a coach because of it, pretty much the people that are doing that would be out of luck. They would only be seen as every other coach.
I don't think that's the answer. I think that, you know, I still have some faith in humans, so a little bit left.
You did get back from Thailand, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Cut it in half.
I just think that, you know, among the community of people that know, right?
Yeah.
I think that's really, look, the people outside of the community are going to believe and say what they want. But like when we go to these places, you have to look at everybody in the eye, you know, and if you're comfortable with, you know, doing shitty things and being in that room with your peers and having them look down on you because you're a shitty person, then, you know, I can't fight against that.
Yeah.
To me, that's the thing. Like, I don't want to be looked down upon because of my actions. And that's important to me. If that's not important to somebody else, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't fight against that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know.
You really have to approach this as with the mentality that you're doing it for yourself, because being a good coach is a rewarding thing to do. And not necessarily because, you know, you love, you know, I love helping people or this or that, like, you're doing it because it's rewarding to be good at the thing you're doing.
Right, and your athlete's a reflection of that.
And you can be proud of what you've done with the work you've done. And on top of all that, no one fucking cares how many Olympic medals you have.
No.
It doesn't matter. No one cares how great you are at it, but they do care about the people that they're surrounded with. So at the end of the day, if you're the kind of person who takes pride in doing a great job with the people that you care about, then you've already won.
Right.
So you're walking away from it, you know, either way, you're walking away from it as the victor. You're not going to get sucked into the trap of trying to get something out of it that, you know, is built on a foundation
it's
of
fleeting.
Lies.
It's fleeting. I mean, I look at somebody, don't show me somebody's best athlete. Show me their worst athlete.
Maybe not the worst. Maybe like right below the best.
And, you know, let's see what you do on a daily basis with the people that you don't even know their names.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that's like when I go into I strength and conditioning, like in these college weight rooms, I don't care about the record board, right? Because you get some freaks from sure. Planet Mars that can power clean 500 pounds. You know, that doesn't tell me you're a good coach. I want to see how they move, or how do the athletes move. That is more telling to me than your record board. It's more telling to me than how many people you put on the Olympic team.
Well, it'd be cool to see, like Chad was talking about, a database, some kind of structure you could look and say, what is the body of work from this club?
How many lifts do your athletes make, right? Yeah. You know, how do they, you know, have they improved over the years? How long have they been with you?
Yeah.
To me, like, these are the things that count. You know, do you make lifts a competition? Do you improve year over year? And how long do you keep them? I mean, those are the important metrics to me when I look at a coach. And it's not about superstars. Well, it's nice to have, but, you know, sometimes if you're competent enough not to shit down your own pants and you have somebody talented, you can get them pretty far. I mean, it's just the way it is, especially in the United States.
And we do know some coaches in Thailand that probably shit down their pants.
Absolutely.
Simply from being there.
Absolutely. I mean, so to me, it's not like talent is a very weird thing because you can get somebody talented and get them pretty far. And does that make you a great coach? It's just maybe not. So even if you do it over and over again, because, you know, we don't have a ton of depth. Like in China, you know, you can be the fifth best person and still make the Olympic team. You know, those guys are different. I mean, not that there's not bad coaches in China. I'm just saying that, you know, the depth is crazy. I mean, look, we have.
Yeah, no one is succeeding on talent alone.
No, yeah. No. It's got to be more to it. And here, you know, I think you got to have something. I mean, talent has gotten people too far, further than they probably deserve. And, you know, it's a slippery slope.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it. Sean, thank you very much for,
thank you guys.
For taking the time, Ben.
Always a pleasure.
Yep.
Thanks for watching and listening to that episode with Sean Waxman. A lot of really great information in there, cool stories about worlds that we really enjoyed, as well as always value Sean's opinion on the inner workings and the goings-on of USA weightlifting, so hopefully you enjoyed that too. Make sure that you like the video and subscribe to the channel. Visit jtsstrength.com for all of our online coaching, powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, strongman, powerbuilding, the powerlifting and powerbuilding AI, weightlifting AI coming soon, our apparel, books, all that good stuff. Thanks for listening. See you next week.